to Fort's Comic News, episode 245. I am one of your hosts, Chris, alongside the Kingmaker himself, Mike.
Kingmaker, huh?
Kingmaker. Is about that from... those, about to give those awards out. We're going to make kings out of people.
Yeah, yeah. If you follow me on Twitter, which none of you do, probably, I've been tweeting out my end of the year stuff of like who I... you know, tweeting about my favorite writers and artists, and they, you know, they say thank you and all this stuff. And so there was a funny interaction with someone where I said, the tweet was like, if Stephanie Phillips isn't on your top writers of 2021 list, are you even reading? And some guy was like, she was on my top list of 2020. It's 2021, dude. And then I replied with, she was on our show in 2018. So,
yeah, you won't get real hipster. I met her at a fucking con.
Yeah.
She was hucking some book about female hockey league, which is a really good book, everybody.
It's a really good book. it's just funny, like, we're all here to promote people. This guy, well, it was 2020. I'm like, well, it's 2021. I mean, I'm pretty sure she made our list for 2020 last year. I'm pretty sure she was on your list, Chris, but it was just a funny interaction.
Yeah. So I had two quick things.
Yeah.
So one, we obviously everybody knows we missed last week.
Yep.
I just moved, and if you don't notice, if you're watching the video, I'm currently in my father's office trying to get this show recorded. So
Nice.
But that's why we missed show last week. And two, I was going through the news, and like, obviously I'm going to have to cut stuff next week because it's going to be 3 weeks worth of news.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to ask you about this. Did you see the Game Awards the other week? Or at least the trailers that came out of it?
No, I know something. I mean, how long ago was this?
It
was a while ago?
Probably last week.
Okay, no, I just know that something about Elden Ring being the most anticipated game. Is that where that came from?
For the second year straight, yeah.
Yeah, for the second year straight, and there's no reason to pre-order it, so don't pre-order anything anymore, anybody.
No, never pre-order. Unless but it's anyways. Pokemon, then you order pre-order Pokemon.
Yep.
No, so they announced a new Star Wars game called Eclipse, which is going to be the first video game set in the High Republic. Looking forward to that.
Yep.
But what is important to us, because it's comic related, is they announced that Monolith Studios, I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're making a Wonder Woman game for Warner Brothers.
Yes, I did hear that, which is sick. Yeah.
Yeah. So
I'm glad to see some of her. I do remember this. Okay. Yep. And I'm very excited for Wonder Woman's like rogues gallery to be in the mainstream, because she fights gods, ladies and gentlemen.
So anyone that doesn't know, Monolith made these two games. They made a bunch of games, but two recently. Right. Shadow of Mordor and Shadow of War.
Yeah.
And they're like these open world, like fast-paced action games.
And they're amazing.
Yeah. So if that's what Wonder Woman is, like set on Themyscira, and then we can fight fucking Ares and shit.
Yes.
I'm all in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You just fight in different wars, like one map's World War One, one map's World War Two.
That'd be even cooler, if it like transcended time and everything. That'd
you
be
just
cool.
Punch Nazis and all that jazz.
I'm always down to punch some Nazis in video games.
And for spoilers for Spider-Man, you want to give them the rundown with that? We're not going to talk Spider-Man at the beginning of the show this episode.
No, so I was originally going to leave it to next week, but I figured we'd do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about this out of the show. I'm just trying to make it interesting for you people out there.
Yeah.
We're going to do our awards, because this is the awards episode. And then we're going to do the full Spider-Man No Way Home talk at the end of the episode. So if you haven't seen Spider-Man No Way Home, when we're done with the awards, stop the episode. Nothing will get spoiled for you.
Mm.
And then I got to hash out how I'm going to do it on YouTube, but if you're on YouTube, most likely I put it in two separate videos because that's how YouTube works.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what we're going to do. That way we can talk full on all the stuff, you know, when the fucking Rhino shows up and everything.
Yep.
No, I'm just kidding, everybody. But we can talk about everything in that movie.
Yeah, so
I need to talk to somebody about this goddamn movie.
I know, we won't spoil it till the end of the show. I do have usually we do our Pat's Flash facts because he has been watching Flash before the break.
Okay.
There's a lot of info here. So thank you to Pat for sending us this. I can't even like make sense of any of this from these four episodes.
This is, by the way, because I know Pat listens. This has become like one of my favorite things of the week.
Yeah. So I guess okay. He sums up the first three episodes because they're very slow. So an alien from the future, 2031, goes back to kill. So this is Flash TV. If anybody's still watching this show, I find these spark or cliff notes better than actually watching the show.
Yes.
So alien from the future goes back into 2021 and wants to kill Barry. And this is also if the show kept going, but it stopped at the crisis event. So I don't know what this is.
Yeah, that's what it ended.
Yeah. Alien from the future goes to kill Barry. Barry tries to befriend him instead of fight him to figure out why he wants to kill him. Maybe because you fucked up the timeline, Barry. Have you ever thought about that?
Over and over and over again.
Yes. Turns out in 2031, Barry goes crazy and becomes evil. So the alien wants to stop Barry. The alien agrees to watch Barry and judge his character. So naturally, Barry starts to have a lot of bad luck. He also starts losing his memory, and there's videos of him attacking the city, which he doesn't remember. Most importantly, it turns out Joe is dead, and Barry doesn't remember. He fell into some train tracks 6 months ago. What? Joe's a pretty important character, everybody. So naturally, Barry decides to go to 2031 to figure out what happens. End the three episodes. Episode 4 starts rehearsal dinner for Thawne and Iris. What? And the rest of the Flash gang and Batgirl and Supergirl gang, everyone is disgusted to see Barry. Barry puts his suit on, and it's the Reverse Flash yellow suit. Then Thawne puts on the Red Flash suit. Thawne reveals his plan to Barry. He went back, and because he's Flash instead of Barry, it's called the Reverse Flashpoint.
So Reverse Flash becomes Flash. So Reverse Flash, Reverse Flash is Flash.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
So, and then this last episode before the break, I guess, is the last episode of the Armageddon arc. Reverse Flash shows up in modern time, attacks the CCPD, which is the police department, but he's too old to draw Barry out. Oh, but old to draw, I don't know, that's a typo. Sorry, Pat. Asks for Barry's help because he's fading away in time. So the whole episode, it's about if they should let Reverse Flash die or not. At the end, they take away his speed, which allows him to live. But then Reverse Flash is just pissed because he doesn't have his speed. You also learn about the Flash and Reverse Flash's first meeting in the future. So I'm guessing maybe the end of the series or this season will be their first meeting. I feel like the writers write this show on one of those like those things at the playground that your friends sit on and spin really fast until you puke. It's not a merry-go-round. I don't know what it's called, but this show is written itself into so many circles.
So my two things here are, I mean, at what point do you realize it's not fucking with the timeline?
Right.
And that was a joke like 7 years ago.
Right.
But my other thing is there an alternate timeline where Barry doesn't turn evil?
Because
haven't they done this before? Wasn't he the metal Flash thing?
I'm pretty sure there was an evil Barry at some point. I don't know. At some point, you just got to stop with this show and all the CW shows and just do what Marvel's doing and all the amazing Hawkeye shit, right?
Yeah, do that now.
Yeah.
Because, we'll talk more about some Marvel shows in a minute, but
yeah,
that's a hint towards my list.
So let's do the awards, shall we?
Yeah.
This is our 2021 King's Speech, King's Award, I don't know, making King's, I don't know what you said earlier, but we're doing it. We're going to give out some fake awards that mean nothing, hold no value, but we think they're great people. So we're going to do writers first, the top five comic book writers from each of us this year. So we're going to go number five first?
Yes.
Okay. I'll go first. Mine was Frank J. Barbier. He's the writer of Astonishing Times. It was one of the Comixology originals this year. Fantastic look on basically of like Peter Parker was only a journalist and his father was a journalist for like superheroes. That's a look on this as a take on the superhero world through like journalist eyes. And one of the, like the Superman of the world pretty much goes crazy and wants to kill the world. Great story. Awesome. I can't wait to see more from him. So
that's on my list to read immediately.
Yep.
So when I did this list, I had 7 and mm-hmm. I had a hard time. So I want to do 2 honorable mentions real quick.
Okay.
One you're going to be mad at me about, but my number 7 would have been Stephanie Phillips.
Okay.
My number 6 was actually Charles Soule. And I wanted to shout him out because the Star Wars stuff is fantastic and he's been leading that room.
Yep.
But my number 5, Joshua Williamson.
Oh, yeah.
I think Josh has taken a step up this year. I love that first issue of Batman that we read. He did the, what was the miniseries he did? Infinite Frontier. Mm-hmm. Justice Incarnate's been really cool.
Yep.
I liked Robin. And he's doing another book, too, that I can't even remember now. But like all the stuff he's been doing at DC, he's taken that step. And I really loved everything he's done so far this year. And
I agree.
I really look forward to Batman next year. It's the first time I've looked forward to Batman since New 52.
Yeah. I will say he's a great writer. He's not on my list. So number 4 for me was Stephanie Phillips. Just for the range that Stephanie Phillips is writing this year between we had like Red Atlantis. And mm-hmm. then, I mean, obviously she's gotten a Wonder Woman. She did that little story for Aquaman, I believe, in the Aquaman trade, which is a great issue, a great story. Yeah, so, and she's on a Comixology original book, so pretty sick stuff going on.
She got both of us to read Harley Quinn. I mean,
yeah. Yep. Which I will be doing in trade form because I can't get myself to be downloading single issues. So who's your number 4?
My number 4 is, I got arrows here. Christopher Cantwell.
Oh, okay.
Blue Flame.
Yeah.
Awesome book. Love that
book. Amazing book. Yeah.
And he did the United States Captain America series this year, which was really good. It's a good series. I'm not going to say mm-hmm. really good or great, but it was a good series, and it was a breath of fresh air after that recent run.
Yeah.
And I even dived into his Iron Man run,
mm-hmm.
and I really love that, too. Like, it's tough to get me into an Iron Man book. I think the last Iron Man book I liked, actually, was when Tom Taylor was writing them, and it was after Axis when he became kind of a, like, he had a mind swap, essentially, and he became mm-hmm. a dick.
Okay.
And I like that, like, Iron Man as a dick.
You mean how he's in the MCU?
Yeah, how he's, you know, supposed to be.
Yeah.
No, but I really like the what Cantwell's been doing with that series, too. So it's just, he kind of jumped on the scene, at least in my view this year. And I really liked what he did. And if you haven't read Blue Flame, everybody, go check that book out.
Yeah,
we might really be talking about it again later.
My number 3 is Ram V. Solely, I mean, he's done a lot of stuff this year, but solely for the fact that he got Swamp Thing pushed to 16 issues. It's hard to get people to buy a Swamp Thing book. I mean, the last person that did it was Scott Snyder. And I think it's a refreshing take on Swamp Thing. Not trying to like one up what Alan Moore did, but also being its own thing, a new character taking up the mantle. So I thought he's done a great job with Swamp Thing. So yeah, deserve a spot.
Yeah, I want to check that book out too. Du-du-du-du. So I wrote down and then I was like, no, this guy deserves to be above this guy. So I have arrows everywhere. yeah.
That's what happens.
Number 3, Genio and Liang.
Oh, okay.
This is solely based on Batman Superman.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the Monkey Prince book. I think that sounds cool. I like the little one shot he did in I forget the name of the actual book, but it was like the Asian celebration DC mm-hmm. thing.
Yep.
I don't read Shang-Chi, but fucking Batman Superman just made such an impression on me this year that he deserves a spot.
Yeah, I mean, it was really hard to pick writers this year, even artists too. This year had so many good books that we're reading, and they're from DC and Marvel too. And it's like I don't want to put when I do these awards, like, yeah, I love Gene Luen Yang, but I'm trying not to put too much on DC and Marvel. But there's a lot of good shit there too, so it's hard, man.
I think that's the only guy I have based solely on a DC or Marvel book. I think everybody else has DC or Marvel stuff, but they've done a lot of good indie stuff as well.
Right.
But that book was so good that it deserves recognition.
Oh yeah, Batman Superman was awesome.
Yeah.
My number two, Mark Russell. No surprise there. This guy, I got the book right here. My bad. If you put, you know, shitty villains and campy superheroes in a book together, I'll read it, and it's amazing. That new book that just started up at DC, which is like the shitty Suicide Squad, and I can't think of the name.
One Star Squadron.
Yeah, One Star Squadron. He's done so much crazy shit this year. You know, Billionaire Island. And
Second Coming Volume 2 was out this
Second
year.
Coming Volume 2, yeah, that was this year. Redbox, he was trying to do something weird with that. He took a stab at it. But I think overall he's pretty consistent in how he writes, and it's always enjoyable stuff.
Moving down a spot from last year, but no surprise, it's on my list. My number two is Donny Cates.
Oh yeah. Surprise, surprise.
The end of Rednecks this year was fantastic. I'm really enjoying Crossover.
Mm-hmm.
We got most of that book was this year.
Yep.
And then his ending to Venom, King in Black, all that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But where this lies for me the most is taking over Thor and what he did with that book.
Yeah.
Because I felt like that was a monumental task. He took over probably the best Thor run of my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And after the best Thor run of my lifetime. And, I think that's huge. That it's almost as good. Like,
yeah,
I love that book and
Hulk, Planet Hulk,
yeah,
or Spaceship Hulk.
Yeah, like I said, I love Venom and all that. And then that I read the first issue of Hulk. I have not read the second issue as of this recording.
Yeah,
but that first issue was really good too. So I just everything Donnie's been doing. Next year is gonna be big too. I look forward to Vanish, continuing with Hulk and Thor. And then seeing more crossover and where that's going.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Donnie didn't make my list. I'm glad we had different writers on our list. And my number one this year is Tom Taylor. Dark Knights of Steel, the Superman Son of Kal-El, or I don't know if I said that one right.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, Superman Son of Kal-El, amazing book. He's doing the vampire book, right? I believe.
No, DC versus Vampires?
No, is that him?
No, that's Matthew Rosenberg.
Okay, I got it mixed up. But no, he's doing Dark Knights of Steel. I said that. Yeah, Dark Knights of Steel is amazing.
Dark Ages is the other one. And there is
Dark Ages. Ages for Marvel. Sorry. Yeah. Okay. He's doing Dark Knights of Steel at Marvel, which is called Dark Ages.
Exactly.
but no, this guy, he's great. He understands every character that he writes. I mean, he knows the fan base. He knows where the character should be going. He's also doing Nightwing right now, which I hear is amazing. And I have never picked up a Nightwing book, but I will be reading that series, which is so bizarre because our mutual friend Jason, who's a huge Marvel Spider-Man fan, was like, you need to read his Nightwing run. And I was like, dude, what are you doing reading Nightwing?
response to that.
Yeah, what are you doing reading Nightwing? but I know there's been some good stuff out there. No shitting on any Nightwing writers. But so Tom Taylor. I mean, if you don't know him by now, we talk about him all the time. So
yeah, if he wasn't doing two books that I just don't care about, which are the two main ones, Superman and Nightwing.
Right? Yeah.
Everything else you named was phenomenal. But those other two books, I can't get it up to go read those books. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, everybody. My number one is also really no surprise, but it's Chip Zdarsky. Mm. Daredevil has been amazing. The first issue of Devil's Reign was really good. the first two issues of New Burn that started recently is phenomenal. The what's the one on Comixology? All Nighters was great.
Oh, that's really good. Yep.
He did the other Comixology original, which I'm going to zone out the name of on now. Stillwater, if people are reading that. Like, so not only is he doing a bunch of really great books, he brought back What If.
Yep.
So not only is he doing a lot of really great books, but he's doing a lot of really great books across genres and jumping genres. So he's doing the classic superhero thing with Daredevil. Yep. And then he's doing the What If thing. And then he's doing New Burn, which is like a crime noir Ed Brubaker style book. And then he's doing Stillwater, which is a horror book. And then he's doing the All-Nighters, which is like this weird crossover of like fables and superheroes. The dude has range like nobody else in this industry. And that's not even say, like, he did the run on Batman Urban Legends where he got me to fucking read Red Hood.
Right. Like, right. Yeah. Impressive.
The dude's just out of this world doing amazing stuff. And to kind of put another addition to that, if you're an avid podcast listener, which I believe you are, if you're listening to this. He does that show Manga-splaining where he has a bunch of people that read manga. And then he, as a American comic creator and artist, like interprets it. One of the best comic book related podcasts you can listen to, but all around just one of my favorite dudes in the industry. And he's been doing amazing work. So
nice. Yeah, he is. Yeah. It's hard to pick five, artists. Number five for me is Alvaro Martinez. He does the Nice House on the Lake, the James Tynion horror book. The art is crazy. I don't even know how to explain it because there's like a character that's an alien and almost breaks like the fourth dimension, so you don't really know how to interpret him. And the way he draws it is absolutely fantastic. So, and I had not heard that name before this year. I'm sure he's done other stuff, but yeah, so kudos to him because that book blew me away when I read it.
Artist for me this year was actually really easy, I think.
Oh, okay.
But they're not really out of the ordinary, so stick with me, everybody. We're going to start with number five, which is the great Derek Robertson. Space Bastards.
Yep.
I get the same feeling from Space Bastards I got when I started reading The Boys, and pretty much everything else Derek's done. So I think he's still on top of his game, doing amazing work. Love that book. And we don't talk about this much, but like the covers he's doing for DC too are just phenomenal. I love them.
Yep.
So, and actually to kind of connect these two, because I forgot to mention it, Justice League Last Ride, written by Chip Zdarsky, everybody.
Yep.
Derek did all the covers for it, and I love those covers so much.
Yeah, they are pretty great.
They're just amazing. Yep. So I had to talk about the great Derek Robertson.
Number five is Leanna Kengis. She was on the show this year. Didn't know her that much until we talked to her. She did a couple issues of the Star Wars Adventures. She has her book, She Will Destroy. Her art style and her colors are like retro wave colors that she has. You check out her website. Amazing art. It's a fresh style. The colors are very pleasing to look at. And her art style is very poppy. It's really cool stuff. So check her out. And hopefully we'll be seeing more from her next year.
My number four is Ryan Stegman. The Steg boy himself. King in Black is basically the reason for this. I was never much of a spider person, so my introduction to Stegman is Venom. And I love his style. I love how everything about what he does. And when he took over King in Black, he masterfully was able to create the line work that was able to interpret this really dark and gritty version of Marvel's New York City, and the way he drew every character just made me want him to just keep doing Marvel stuff forever, because there's not a single character in there I wouldn't want to see him draw more of.
Cool. Number three, Jamal Eagle for, I hope I say Eagle Ray or Eagle, for Wrong Earth. Night and Day, his art is so good. He's got a Comixology original coming up with Scott Snyder, so look out for that. I think it comes in February or March. But amazing artist. No doubt that Scott Snyder grabbed him up from this book, because we know that Ahoy is doing a whole crossover event with this book, so it's got to be, people have got to be checking it out now. He just draws my favorite superheroes, and they're not even mainstream superheroes, so it's just amazing stuff.
My number three is Ivan Reis. Back to Batman, Superman.
Yeah.
I mean, I've loved Ivan Reis for a while. He did the run with Jeff Johns on Aquaman. He did the event book for New 52, where it was this crime syndicate coming.
Yep.
I'm forgetting the name of it now, but he's been around DC for a while, especially working with Jeff Johns.
Mm-hmm.
He got to work with Gene Nguyen Liang on this book, and not only did it have that awesome Ivan Reis style that I love, but dude, let's get nerdy for a minute. The panel layout of that fucking book with the film reel, and then the archive, and there'd just be film reels.
Yeah, that's so good. It's so awesome.
I mean, spoilers, that book's gonna be mentioned in every category for me because it's that good, and it deserves
I mean, we both read that. I'm glad that we have different artists and writers and stuff, but like, I agree with everything Chris says here because that book was amazing too. Honestly, I was trying to go through everything that I read this year, and that one, like, I missed Batman Superman somewhere. But it is fantastic. It's probably the best Batman Superman run I've read.
That book, just something about it just hit me the right way.
Yeah, it was great.
And I want everybody to read it because I think it's so good.
Number two, Peter Kraus. The artist for Ahoy Comics. I'm trying to, oh my God, I'm drawing a, I thought I wrote the name down for the book here. You give me your, you go with your third one here.
My second one, you mean?
Oh, second one. Sorry. Yeah.
My second one was Marco Cincetto. This is the guy doing Daredevil and Devil's Reign. I think I mentioned him last year too, but I want Cincetto to draw Daredevil for the rest of his life. He's the perfect Daredevil artist. He has just a clean, good style to him. And he knows how to get that Hell's Kitchen look with the clean aesthetic of Daredevil in just a perfect way. And until he leaves that book, he's probably gonna be my favorite artist, one of my favorite artists of the year every year. If you're on the book was.
Yeah, I don't know. I thought for some reason I had My Bad written down. Oh yeah, it is My Bad. Sorry. Peter Kraus is working on My Bad. It confused me because it's got Russell and Ingman. So Mark Russell's writing it with Ingman, and then Kraus is the third name. So like freaked out.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, I thought it was wrong for a second. He is drawing My Bad, and another reason that I love him, just like Jamal Eagle, I mean, he does classic superhero looks. Like, when you pick up this My Bad book, it just reminds you of, like, a pop art style it makes the book absurdity so much better because they're drawn so professionally, or drawn so not professionally, because everybody's a professional artist on a comic, but seriously, I would say. With, like, the detail, the shading, you know, all these characters are meant to be like, they look like Batman, but they also act like dumbasses. So that's pretty great. And then my number one was Mike Perkins for his Swamp Thing book. Much like Chris said for the Batman Superman style, Mike Perkins does crazy layouts for the Swamp Thing book. There's a lot of transitions between, you know, his thoughts and the actions going on in the real world. So he does a great job with it. I mean, Mike Perkins got a great history with comic art, but this book specifically, I talk about Swamp Thing a lot. It's really great stuff.
So this had to be my number one. but Andrew Sorrentino is my number one.
Mm.
He really jumped out this past like 4 or 5 months. Mm-hmm. Because I think not only has Sorrentino been an artist I've loved for a while now, but I think between Primordial and Batman the Imposter, he's doing the best work of his career right now.
Cool.
He has these amazing two-page layouts on both those books.
Mm-hmm.
He's just kind of taken his style and perfected it. Yep. Almost. He's one of like a short list of artists in which I will pick up a book based on his name.
Mm-hmm.
And Batman the Imposter is an example of that. I had zero interest in that book, but it's Sorrentino, so I'm going to at least check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that had to be my number one.
Awesome. So we're doing books next, right?
Yeah, we'll do top comics next.
Top comic books. My number five is the Autumnal. Daniel Kraus. And it's a vault comic, horror book. It's terrifying. I read it like towards the beginning of the winter, so it was nice and dreary, and you know, it happens during fall, the book. Really good completed story. The art from Chris Shahan is amazing. It fits the book so well. It's very eerie. You know, it's a tale of a woman who inherits this house in a strange town from her mother who wasn't very close to her. You know, lo and behold, there's some weird satanic ritual shit going on, but it's a slower burn, but it's really good. It's not just spooky trying to be spooky. There's a whole myth to it. Like a mythos to the town and the person that's like haunting it. It's really good shit.
My number five. Let's see. Oh, so honorable mention because I couldn't make a decision, but Reckless, the book mm-hmm. series from Brubaker and Sean Phillips, was like my number six. But my number five is Daredevil by Chip Zdarsky and Marco Cincetto. I've talked about this a lot already, but Daredevil is one of my favorite characters. The book from the writing is phenomenal. The art is top notch. I love the way they took the character. I love the twist of Elektra becoming Daredevil. Spoilers, everybody. Everything about it is just awesome. So one of my favorite characters, been a really good book. My number five.
My number four was Ultra Mega Image Comics. James Herron, Dale Stewart on the art. This book was a crazy surprise to me. I remember finding it in a comic shop. It's like the magazine style bound. They're like 68 page issues, I believe, or 48 page. Three issues so far in the first story. It's ridiculous. The art is insane. The story is insane about like these kaijus and monsters, or kaijus and like Power Ranger style, like people that can grow big and fight people. And fight the kaijus. It's an insane story. It's over the top. And I loved it when I picked it up. I'm like, holy shit, how did I not hear about this? So yeah, that was my number four.
My number four is Blue Flame from Christopher Cantwell and Adam Gorham. Once again, I talked about this book a little bit earlier, but I love the twist on it. Where the book left off, as we know it right now,
mm-hmm.
Is a really good twist. And I look forward to seeing it concluded. But it's just been a really cool ride. Another Vault book, by the way. I think, was Ultra Mega a Vault book, too?
Ultra Mega was Image. Image
book. Oh, okay.
Yep.
So at least we got two Vault books already. yeah, I just, once again, everybody check that book out. It's awesome.
Number three, Geiger by Jeff Johns, Gary Frank. I almost forgot about this book this year. Chris is shaking his head because it's like another book that was so good and we left off the list.
It was my number seven.
Okay, yeah. It's just hard to pick things this year, man. Everything's mm-hmm. so good. Jeff Johns really killed it with this book. I'd like to see him do more stuff like this rather than playing with the DC characters because I don't know what his schedule or how busy he gets with continuity, but doing his own universe is kind of where he should stay.
Yeah. I think he needs the creative freedom to get away because a bunch of his recent DC stuff just hasn't been up to par, at least in my eyes.
I agree. And this kind of re-solidified him. And honestly, Gary Frank's art, holy shit, that guy's just on another level. It's like Gary Frank, Alex Ross, and everybody else.
Yeah.
If I had to, yeah, amazing. Yeah. So that was my number three.
Gary Frank is Alex Ross if Alex didn't paint his stuff.
True. Yeah.
That's how I feel about Gary Frank.
Yep. Yeah, I know. You're right. Yep.
Number three is Batman Superman. Gene Nguyen, okay. Yang, Ivan Reis. Yeah.
One more could you say?
Go read that book. Yeah.
Go read that book. Number two, Radiant Black. Kyle Higgins, Costa on the art. We talk about this book a lot. Who's the publisher for this? Is this Vault?
That's Image.
Image. Okay. Image. This book was a pleasant surprise. Chris started reading it before I did. It's a tale of this almost like Power Rangers, but the power comes at a cost, or there's something else tied to it, like another dimension where the power comes from. And it's almost sentient. Really cool story. People using the power for good, for bad, from their own perspective. They're not using it for bad. Different cultures using it. It's really good, and it's been ongoing. I mean, it's up to issue 11 or 12 now, so really good stuff.
My number two will be a Vault book. Barbaric from Michael Morosi and Nathan C. Gooden. It was three issues, but it was three fucking good issues, man. Some dark comedy, fantasy type mysticism, all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, it's about a barbarian who has a talking axe and just wants nothing to kill
more
people.
To it. Nothing more to it, man.
And I just loved it.
Yeah, yeah, me too. That's why it's my number one for comp.
Nice.
we almost matched up. Yeah, no, Barbaric, by far, it was like the Holy Trinity for me. It was an indie publisher. The colors and art. I mean, Nathan C. Gooden's art was amazing. Marecchi, who wrote it, Michael Marecchi, amazing story. I mean, it's a simple story, but it also, you got to do it well. You can't just, there's like a fine line between like going too campy and going too serious. And the way he did that book, it just worked out perfectly. And it sounds like everybody loved it. I mean, they did like three or four printings of it. It's an amazing book. It was so over the top. It was exactly what I wanted to read this year. It's exactly what I needed to read. Because that was the one book this year that I was like, man, I got to get my hands on this fucking book. I got to read it. yeah, so well-deserving a number one.
More to come next year.
Yep.
My number one is actually Batman the Imposter by Mattson Tomlin and Andrew Sorrentino.
Damn, Batman book on your number one. Are you okay?
Yeah. there's so much that goes into this because I think I talked so much shit about this book prior to being released. Mm-hmm. Because I just thought the tagline was stupid.
Yeah.
And I stand by it. But I checked it out because of Sorrentino, and I fell in love with it. It's just so good. And it finished off this past week, and it stuck the landing.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, everybody out there, just check it out. Check out that first issue. And if it doesn't hook you at the first issue, then I don't tell you, but it's some of the best Batman stuff I've read in a long time.
Mm.
And I just found this out today while doing research for the book. I probably should have known this, but Mattson Tomlin wrote the script to the Batman movie that's coming out that Matt Reeves is directing.
I think I remember seeing that crossover between them. Yeah, I started reading the book when you told me. It was really good. I just haven't finished it yet. So that's one that slipped the cracks for me. So I will go back and finish it.
So now I'm that much more excited for that movie because he wrote a good comic.
Yep.
And that's one for one, right?
Yeah, right. There you go.
But yeah, love that book. Loved it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Last category is multimedia. For my number five, I have Dune, the movie. Just because I'm a huge Dune fan, read the book. Haven't read all the books, but I like the world. I think it was a slow burn. Yes, it should be watched like part one and two together. But I think as far as translating the book to the movie, there's a lot there that I think has to be missed, whether or not the right stuff was missed. I think visually the movie was absolutely amazing. Denis Villeneuve is such a great director. So
Doom probably would have been my number six.
Okay.
So I'll be honest with everybody, I didn't do a ton this year. So everything is kind of comic related,
mm-hmm.
because this is a comic book show.
Yep.
But my number five was Shang-Chi.
Yeah, there you go.
I went into that movie expecting not like it, but to kind of feel meh about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a kung fu guy. I don't really care about Shang-Chi. And I really fell in love with the sidekick character. She was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
I love that sequence at the end when they're in the other dimension and they're fighting the dragon. I thought there were some cool fight scenes in it. I thought it was a solid Marvel movie. Far from my favorite, let alone my favorite this year. But I really like that movie. And more people should go out and check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I try to do mostly comic book related stuff. But it is what it is.
I said that because when I did get the chance to go do stuff this year, it's been a fucking nuts year, everybody.
Oh, yeah.
At least for me.
Yep.
I tried to go and do the comic book stuff because either I want to talk about on this show or someone else invited me to go do something. So a lot of my viewing this year was comic related. Mm-hmm. I still haven't seen James Bond.
So
that's kind of where I've been at.
Yeah, the only reason I saw most of these movies is because I ordered them on the TV. I didn't go out. Shang-Chi would have been on my list, but my viewing experience at the theater ruined the movie for me, so I have to watch it again.
Well, and the only reason I saw Dune was because me and my father were that's our one of our things together, and I was mm-hmm. We got to go watch that movie together. So. Yep.
Number four for me is Witcher Season 2. I just finished that this week. Better than season one to me, just because we're established in the world. I don't play the games. I don't read the books. Henry Cavill is a chiseled man. And he's a fantastic Witcher. This one is more focused on him training Ciri. I think the actress who plays Ciri is really good. All the characters are fantastic in that show. And this season, there's pretty much a monster fight every episode, and that's what I'm there for. So
it's what the Witcher should be.
Yeah, and it's crazy. It's not just him killing. He's either fighting dudes or he's fighting witchers, and or not fighting witchers. He's fighting monsters as a witcher. But some of the moves he pulls to kill the monsters are just fucking insane. So that show was a lot of fun, and I just finished it in a few days.
My number four was Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy, the video game.
Nice.
Another thing that I went into kind of thinking, it probably won't be that good, and was a lot of fun. The game feels like what James Gunn did,
mm-hmm.
where James Gunn kind of set everything in a 70s vibe.
Yep.
This game takes it a decade further and sets it in an 80s vibe.
Okay.
So there's a lot of 80s metal, a lot of just that style and that look going on with everything.
That's cool.
From Star-Lord having the jacket with his name mm-hmm. on the back and a lot of hair metal in the soundtrack, but it kept the vibe of Guardians with the banter. We got to deal with the Church of Universal Truth. You meet Cosmo.
Cool.
And it's just a fun kind of single player experience. So I had to shout it out because I had a lot of fun with it.
That'll be me with the Suicide Squad game. Number three for me was Godzilla versus Kong. Because that was just an amazing experience. I had nothing else to say about it. All those Godzilla movies, you can give them 20s on Metacritic. I don't give a shit. I'll still watch them. And big monsters fighting each other. Or just for that boat scene alone with Kong chained to the boat, it was so sick. That scene was so sick, man.
It was so much fun.
Yeah. So, and then it turned into Journey to the Center of the Earth there for a little bit. I think that was the same movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was insane. And then you get to I forgot that whole part, that even happened, dude. It was insane. Yeah.
That's my favorite part, because that's when Godzilla's just fuck it. I'm going to drill a hole to the center of the Earth. I'm going to look down and be like, Kong, get your bitch ass up here.
Get on up here. I'm waiting for you. Yeah, so amazing stuff. Yeah, that was my number three.
I'm going to rewatch that movie now.
Yeah, me too.
My number three was The Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
James Gunn doing Suicide Squad. He did, and we did a review way back when, but he basically killed everyone off from the old movie, which made yeah. me happy.
Yep.
And then took new characters and showed everybody what a Suicide Squad movie can be. And speaking of giant kaiju, Starro.
Yep.
That movie had great banter, great sequences. Polka Dot Man's in it. What else? I mean, it was just an awesome movie.
Yeah. No, it was amazing. And it's my number two. So The Suicide Squad by James Gunn is everything I wanted it to be. I can't wait for him to do more Suicide Squads. I can't wait for Peacekeeper comes out soon.
Yeah.
So cannot wait for that TV show that he did. So I'm really excited for that. What was your number two?
So my number two, which I'm pretty sure is your number one, is Spider-Man No Way Home.
yes, it is. Yep.
We'll get into the spoilers here after everything, but it subverted my expectations. It had amazing scenes throughout it. And just had little nuggets throughout it that just made me happy.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful, wonderful movie. And if you haven't seen it yet, everybody, please go out and see it before it gets spoiled, because I made it a mission to not get spoiled on it. And I'm so glad I didn't get anything spoiled on me.
Right, right.
Because from the first like 10 minutes of the movie where I almost screamed to the last 10 minutes of the movie where I was crying, it's just an amazing movie.
Yep. Yeah, it is my number one. And that's just it. I've never had so much fun in a movie theater than going to see that movie. I mean, like, everybody had to mask up, and I was, you know, a little iffy about that because it was so busy and packed. And just sitting there and everybody cheering and clapping made me forget about all that. So it was such an amazing movie experience to go opening night. Me and my girlfriend, who hadn't seen the last Spider-Man movie, was kind of hesitant about coming along, and she did. And she said, holy shit, that was so much fun. So, yeah, go see it. Don't read about it online.
And my number one was WandaVision.
Oh, man. I forgot about WandaVision.
WandaVision started off this year. I almost did too. And then I started like, when did this start?
Yeah.
It started off this year. It started this new transition into Marvel on Disney Plus and these Marvel TV shows that we're all enjoying right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still kind of the top tier for me, as much as I enjoyed Winter Soldier, as much as I'm enjoying Hawkeye and all that. It just transcended. And it was one of the few things in modern memory where every week I texted you, mm-hmm. or I went to the comic shop and talked to our buddy Joe about it,
mm-hmm.
and like all this stuff. And even like, I even have this funny moment. I think it was episode 4 where the end credit sequence is Voodoo Child.
Yeah.
And that literally came out on my dad's birthday. And I remember I was at work all day, and I'm like, I gotta call dad when I get home.
Yeah.
I got home and I was exhausted, and I sat down, cooked dinner, and then I got down and I just watched WandaVision, and Voodoo Child comes on, which is my dad's favorite song. And I was like, oh shit, I gotta call dad.
Oh shit, I gotta call him now.
So it's got this funny memory attached to it as well, but that show was just amazing. And it's just evidence that you can do something good and meaningful and exciting inside of a universe like that.
Mm-hmm. It was an amazing show. Reading and watching things and COVID, memory loss, all that shit. It's most likely just weed, but there's so much I've read this year. I think it might be like switching to digital doesn't help. And I completely forgot about Fast and the Furious 9, which is like my favorite movie of all time because they drive a car in space. So there's so many great things to enjoy. But so many good comics, so many good indie comics. So hopefully everybody had some shared some experiences or some agreements or disagreements with what we had on our list. If you did, you can follow me on Twitter and argue with me about it. I know none of you do. And yeah, so where do we go from here, Chris? Do we just start talking about Spider-Man? Or
Well, I'll just say, since it's the last show of the year, shout out to everybody that's on the show this year.
Thank you all.
We had an amazing slate of guests this year. Shout out to you, Mike. I had an amazing time with you this year.
Yeah, me too, man. It's been a lot of fun. It's always a lot of fun.
Every year, I think I'm more impressed on who says, yeah, I'll be on your show. And
yep.
And yeah, it was a great year, and next year hopefully it'll be even better. So,
and we made some money off the show this year, a whole $50. Don't forget about that. We made it, folks. We made it. I got $50 in my pocket. No, I think it went to my heating bill. So
that sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, just what Chris said, thanks for everybody for listening. All my friends and family that listen, I know you guys do because you tell me, and I love you for it. Chris, the show would not be here without Chris. I mean, you know, I leave and go somewhere. The show still goes on because Chris is such a hard worker, and is very dedicated to the show and knows all the electronic shit. I am terrible with that stuff. But I mean, you know, the one show we missed is because, you know, I couldn't take it over when he was gone because it's so much work that he puts into this show. And it's because he loves delivering this content to everybody. He loves our subscribers. And I do as well. We wouldn't be here without you. I mean, we would have cut this show at episode 200 if we still only had 500 listeners, but now I think we have like 15,000 or something like that. So we thank you so much, and we wish you all a happy holiday season and a happy new year, and don't stop reading comics.
No, because next year is going to be some good ones. Yeah, Saga's coming back, everybody.
Saga's coming back. So, Brian K. Vaughn, get ready for my top five spot, you son of a bitch. but yeah, so I guess we'll start talking about Spider-Man. If you don't want to hear, or do you want to do, what do you want to do?
So yeah, everybody go follow Mike at Fortress Ricker. Follow me at Fortress Chris. Follow the show at Fortress Comics _.
Yep.
And you know all the other stuff.
Yep.
Patreon, the five stars, all that. Do that. If you don't want to be spoiled about Spider-Man, and please, if you have not watched this movie, don't keep listening.
Yeah, do not keep listening.
So if you don't want to get spoiled on Spider-Man, cut it now, leave. If you've already seen the movie, stick around, and we're just going to nerd out and talk about spoily shit right now. So
we'll give you like 5 seconds to leave. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Fucking Daredevil.
Did you unfold a piece of paper? That's so funny. yeah, so I mean, like, okay, I said this, it's a 10 out of 10 movie for me. A few things this movie solidified: Willem Dafoe is the best villain, Marvel villain of all time. We know Doc Ock's back. We're not even gonna talk about the Spider-Man yet. Yes, I said that, dude. So the reason I think Doc Ock and Green Goblin are probably the best Marvel Cinematic Universe villains is because they have so much humanity in them, and they're actual people.
Yeah.
And as much as people shit on Raimi, and I think a lot of people praise Raimi, Raimi didn't do the third Spider-Man.
Did he? He didn't?
No. No, I don't believe that was him. Or whoever added the extra shit. I'm going to look it up now. Spider-Man 3. Is it? Oh, it is Sam Raimi. I'm sorry. I can't. Yeah. Who's the guy that wrote it with him? Was it Alvin Sargent?
Listen, Spider-Man 1 and 2. Spider-Man 2 is still one of the best superhero movies of all time.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Spider-Man 1 and 2 are great movies. They stand up to this day. So, Raimi, all the praise for that. You still get shit for making Spider-Man dance. Like, yeah. I'm sorry. It's his life.
Did. Yeah. I couldn't save him. I was going to try to save him. But anyway, so Sam Raimi gave Willem Dafoe and Admiral Molina, I mean, they're amazing actors, but also, like, they were people before they were villains. And I think that's an important part of making a good villain. And then, okay, so It starts off, Spider-Man's identity is revealed. He needs a lawyer. So who do you call?
Fucking Matt Murdock.
Matt Murdock.
This is the moment where I screamed. Yeah. I literally, when like his face pops up on the screen, yeah. I'm like, it's fucking Charlie Cox, everybody.
Yeah. Everybody cheered in my theater. They're like, oh, I started clapping. And it was amazing because people were like, oh my God, we know him from the show. Like,
listen, I am a, you know, cold-blooded American straight man. No woman could give me the feeling that seeing Charlie Cox's face on that screen did that day. Waves of pleasure. I was so fucking happy. Especially after, are you caught up on Hawkeye?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, after showing
me. After
Kingpin.
Yeah, Kingpin coming back. Like, yep. That just, oh yeah, that was amazing. And then we caught the brick.
Catching the brick, like showing him that, oh, he's a great lawyer, but also catching the brick and Spider-Man being like, who are you?
I'm a really good lawyer.
I'm a really good lawyer. So, you know, we find out that he breaks the multiverse. The whole movie we're saying there, are we going to get the Spider-Man? Are we going to get the Spider-Man? The reveal with his buddy, what's his buddy's name? Not Nate.
Ned.
Ned. He mentions that he feels a tingling in his fingers. He can use magic. He opens up a portal trying to find Spider-Man. And the first spider we see is not, we know it's not Tom Holland. Like, he turns around and the theater was like, oh, like freaking out. And who pops, I get goosebumps talking about this, pops through the reveal was amazing, pops through the portal, and it's fucking Andrew Garfield, the Amazing Spider-Man.
So, real quick, this wasn't an act, everybody. I had seriously convinced myself that there was no way we were seeing these two in this movie.
I had too. Because you're usually not wrong about these things, and he had been denying it in interviews. Usually, you'd see like pictures of people. Like, a lot of people take pictures of movie sets nowadays, and you usually can see who's in the movies. I didn't see any of that.
I was, whether it was to, you know, save myself or whatever, I was convinced that it was going to be a stinger at best.
Yep.
When he pops up and he like kind of sticks his hand up and like sticks to the wall to prove that he's Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I just remember thinking to myself, I've never been so happy to be wrong.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
It was, yeah. I was so happy when he showed up.
So, and then we get the Tobey Maguire just walks through the portal and Tobey Maguire looks amazing. He still looks so good. I mean, he looks great. He still looks like a 30-year-old Spider-Man.
It's funny you say that, because the first thing that I thought when I saw him was, damn, Toby got old.
Yeah, well, he was old already. And if you watch the Spider-Man, I still think he looks good, but man.
I look like that when I'm Toby's age, I will be super happy. I will not. I will be a fucking disgusting mess.
Yeah.
But if I did, I would be happy as shit. I'm just saying, I was like, yeah, Toby got old.
The movie, okay, so we get all three Spider-Men together. Those interactions are amazing, like the geeking out over the web shooters. Tom Holland asking him if he could shoot him out of his dick, pretty much.
I was going to say, there's a 100% a cum joke in there, just, once again, makes me happy. I love, so when those three are together,
mm-hmm.
I love the banter, especially the banter between Andrew and Toby.
Yeah.
Like, Tom was good, too, but those two together, for some reason, was just magic.
Andrew Garfield, man, I forgot how much I liked him as Spider-Man. I was like, man, I liked all of them as Spider-Man. It was hard for me to choose a favorite. They're all so good.
When you go back and watch those movies, I was just talking to somebody about this. When you go back and watch those, the problem with the Amazing Spider-Man movies is Peter Parker sucks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Spider-Man stuff is phenomenal, but the Peter Parker, it seriously is emo Peter Parker, and that's what kind of sucked about it. I also forgot how good of an actor Garfield is.
Yeah.
Like, he's too good to be in superhero movies. And people don't realize it because of those movies.
I thought this movie made me like Tom Holland more. I'll always be a fan of Tobey Maguire, but...
I didn't rewatch the last two before seeing this. I don't know if
I didn't either. No,
I don't remember. One of the things that stuck out about Tom Holland in this movie to me was that they really leaned into he's actually really smart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't remember him being like a super genius in the other movies.
I don't remember that either.
So when he's like doing science stuff, and we haven't talked about Doctor Strange yet, but he's in the mirror dimension, he's like, it's algebra or whatever it was, trigonometry.
Yeah.
That made me happy because I'm like, okay, we brought that aspect of Peter in.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That we haven't seen yet. At least I don't remember seeing.
That was great. So the scene, like, you know, Spider-Man's got all the villains in his Happy's apartment, and the spider sense scene where, like, he knows something's wrong, and then he finds out it's Green Goblin, and the flip from Willem Dafoe to being Happy to, like, morphing his face to look like the fucking Green Goblin. Like, it was where he talks to, he's like, he's on sabbatical or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my god, Willem Dafoe, man, holy shit. That scene was amazing. There's so much great shit going on. Jamie Foxx came back, and I had a newfound love for Electro.
The Electro redesign for this movie was as good as it could get.
Yep.
Even like those flashes of the mask,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and like everything. He was a bright spot in this movie too.
And I mean, just the interactions, the cracking each other's backs, that's from Spider-Man 2. Cause I rewatched some of the Spider-Man movies, the original trilogy, cause it's been on TV now. And there's a scene where like Peter Parker falls and hurts his back and he's like, oh, my back. And they did so many like throwbacks to the old movies, and fucking Willem Dafoe says, I'm something of a scientist myself. Oh my God. Like the fucking theater lost their shit when he said that, just from the memes alone, dude. There's a subreddit dedicated to just specifically, it's called Raimi Memes. It's all Sam Raimi memes from the Spider-Man movies. They lost their fucking shit after that movie, dude. They are like, we have so much new content. it's amazing. The only thing that I hear about it, and I think you're always going to have this with a movie that talks about multiverse and other dimensions, confuse some people. And that's going to happen. I think Marvel did it. They eased their way into it the best they could. I mean, they had mentions of it in comics recently. They had mentions of it in TV shows like WandaVision and the Loki show. Forgot about that show.
That was this year too.
That was a series this year. Holy shit, dude. I was like, there was another show about multiverse.
That wouldn't have cracked my top five. But
Me too. I just thought about that. Yeah, shit. And I think, I mean, that's going to happen either way. Still 10 out of 10 for me the movie was so good.
Everything about it was just, there's so many good things. I loved Sandman from the third movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he was like the biggest bright spot of that movie to me. The third Raimi movie, that is. Electro's great. I thought Lizard was cool. He wasn't used a whole lot.
He looked really bad. The CGI for Lizard, I will say, looked awful.
He's whatever. I'm not a big Lizard guy anyways.
Yeah, I know.
And I also like the more dinosaur-y Lizard look, where he actually kind of looks like a crocodile almost.
Right, yep.
But anyways. And then you could tell they couldn't get I don't know if the actors passed on, or if he just didn't want to do it,
mm-hmm.
but it was very obvious that they like CG'd stuff from Amazing Spider-Man into mm-hmm. this just to show him transform back into Connors.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got, I think it was three complaints.
We didn't talk about the death of Aunt May.
Oh, dude, I cried.
So the only thing that was missing from Green Goblin to make him a perfect MCU villain to me, and he is my favorite, is he had to push past that edge. Like, this went from like 89 Batman to like the Dark Knight when he kills Aunt May. Like, that's where he took, like, okay, you know, we started with this villain, and he's willing to go beyond you know, and cross that line, and it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get that, with great power comes great responsibility. Holy fuck. What a powerful moment. A great way to use her death for that and really solidify Peter as, at the end of the movie, he realizes, like, I don't need my friends to know who I am. I need to protect them. So he gets this apartment. And I'm trying to remember, is that apartment like the same apartment he has that Tobey Maguire has? I think they're trying to make them look similar or something like that.
Yeah, I think so.
Also, someone said at the end of the movie, when he swings away, he's near the apartment of Kate Bishop. He's like in the same area.
Oh,
but that's, I think that might be an Easter egg, but yeah, go ahead with your three issues.
So,
sorry.
So yeah, I think it's three. I'm only remembering two right now, but we'll do those. Then I want to talk about the ending. And, I think that was it. But anyways. Oh yeah, it is three. So there's a moment where, Toby is talking about MJ and they're together. Sounds like they're married.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's talking, I'm like, just say you have a daughter. Just say you have a daughter. Just say it.
Yeah.
And he never does. That's one complaint. These are how stupid my complaints are.
These are complaints, people.
My second complaint is there's a moment where, and so this made me laugh because I haven't watched Amazing Spider-Man in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I forgot that the whole reason that Electro doesn't like Spider-Man is because he thought that Spider-Man was black.
Yeah.
And so he was just upset that Spider-Man's not black.
Right.
Which I think is a really great commentary on society right now. But that aside, the line he says where he's like, there's got to be a black Spider-Man somewhere. And I'm just like, if Miles doesn't show up in the end credit sequence, I'm going to kill somebody now. Because you said, I hope there's a black Spider-Man.
Yep.
And he doesn't. And then the end credit sequence. So I didn't mind the middle one. I thought that was funny. It was goofy. It's fine.
But they're leaving the Venom. The Venom stayed back in this universe.
Yeah, which is a great way to just do Venom and get it over with. Like, not have to go through the whole he's from space bullshit.
No, he's just left over from
Tom Hardy. And if you really care, go watch those Venom movies.
Right.
But the fact that the end credit sequence was a trailer for the next movie really bugged me.
And I didn't even see it. I didn't know that was there, so I didn't see it.
Oh, it's literally a trailer for Doctor Strange. And I'm just like, no, don't. Marvel, do not do that again. That just left a bad taste in my mouth. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing in this whole thing where it's like a real complaint. Like, do not do that again.
Yeah. I mean, it was a trailer reveal, which is kind of cool, but still, like, give us a scene.
Yeah, well, especially since, like, we got the Venom thing, which is, I really liked that sequence. That you saw the mid-credit sequence, right?
Yeah, I saw that one, yeah.
Yeah, so when he's like, so you're telling me there's a purple guy, and he likes stones?
Yeah, right.
So yeah, especially after that, and just that my head, I'm just like, show Miles.
Mm-hmm.
But those are my only complaints, so I'll say the Easter eggs throughout it were phenomenal. Like I said, mm-hmm. just the hint that Toby is like M2 Spider-Man made me just freak out. Like, at some point you could just do that now.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the ending. So this whole movie was a retcon.
Yep.
So that nobody knows who Peter Parker is. So now nobody knows, like, nobody. None of the Avengers, none of his friends, nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And Aunt May's dead. So now we're in a world where Peter is just Spider-Man and nobody knows who he is. He doesn't have fancy suits. He doesn't have the Stark tech, all that shit.
Right.
As much as I love this movie, and I think it's the best Spider-Man movie and possibly one of the best Marvel movies, I am so excited to see Tom Holland be Peter Parker finally.
Yeah, like a no-name photographer.
Yeah, like, and just... Yeah. The suit he wears, like, that he sewed up, it looked like the old school suit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, nobody knows who he is. J. Jonah is still bitching about him on the internet. and it can just be like an old school Spider-Man story and not have to be as grand, because how Spider-Man was introduced, being, you know, with Tony and everything.
Right.
That was my favorite part of the whole movie, was just the idea that the next movie is going to be this.
Yeah.
And it probably won't be, I'll be honest, it won't be as good as this one in terms of like how I feel.
Nothing will ever, like, replace that 20 years of buildup for excitement.
Yeah. But you do get a real, it's the first time in movies that I can think of where you get a real retcon, where like this character we know and love, who's had three great movies, gets a refresh that continues the continuity. And it's another one of those things where you and I and people listening have dealt with this for years because we read comics, but now like the mass gets to see it.
Yeah.
And we really get to like refresh, because I've always felt that these movies were more Miles movies than Peter movies. And now it just, the way it's set up, it's now a Peter movie. And yeah, I loved it. Everybody should go out. I mean, hopefully if you're listening, you've already watched it, but
yeah,
I hope everybody gets to go out and watch it. It seems based on the numbers, everybody did go out and watch it. So I'm happy.
It was
about
awesome.
That.
10 out of 10. And thanks for sticking around and listening, and we'll see everybody in the new year.
Yes, we will. Bye, everybody.